Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Sunday, September 26, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Stagflation, Not So Transitory. This, of course, is in the same vein, going against the Federal Reserve and many other mainstream economists out there, but primarily those at the Federal Reserve and within the White House, particularly with Secretary of Treasury Dingbat Janet Yellen telling us that inflation is going to be transitory. This is not the case anymore. They are now changing their tune, which is no surprise because it was never going to be transitory. I told you this from the get-go, that this was going to be a very long-term inflationary environment, and it is a stagflationary environment. Basically, it's just a combination of stagnant, so we have a stagnant economy, high unemployment, and in an inflationary environment. That's exactly what we have. That's what the data keeps indicating to me. And there's no sign of any type of reversal. Now, I like to stress, when it comes to inflationary pressures, that these are going to impact disproportionately and most severely, unfortunately, those goods and services that everybody needs. And that's where you have to focus. That's where you have to pay attention to. Now, goods and services that are not needs, but rather wants, your discretionary spending, we may see prices come down. That's not going to be a good thing, unfortunately, for a lot of those producers who are selling those goods and services because they are already incurring higher producer prices. So their margins are going to get squeezed. And what this is going to turn into is higher unemployment because they're not going to be able to protect their margins. They're not going to be able to pass on all of those cost increases onto the market because there's just not going to be that much demand for them to begin with. You increase the price, you're just going to lessen the demand for those goods and services. That's Econ 101. And so the only way that they're going to be able to protect their margins is by laying people off. So this is just going to be a very vicious cycle until it cleanses itself. Now, this would potentially clean itself or cleanse itself rather quickly and efficiently if market forces were allowed to exist in this country, like they're supposed to. We're supposed to be a free market capitalistic system. Unfortunately, we only give lip service, and really only some of the country, some politicians, some leaders give lip service to it. But in actuality and practice, we're not really anything like it. This is a very centralized command and control economy, unfortunately. And so all of these problems that we are facing are just going to be that much worse, and their duration is going to be that much longer because we don't want to allow market forces to do what market forces would do, and that is clean out the waste. Cleanse the system of so much malinvestment. Bad decisions by entrepreneurs, bad decisions by managers, bad decisions by policymakers. Because the policymakers most definitely don't want to take any type of responsibility. No politician in office wants the economy to collapse on their watch, even though that's what's already taking place. This is the greatest depression. It is just being covered over right now with trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of money printing. That's not productivity. They want to say that we're in some type of miraculous V-shaped recovery, which of course that's even dwindling, just like their argument was with inflation being transitory. They're no longer talking about that. Because even the Federal Reserve, the New York branch, is no longer calculating or forecasting GDP. Because they just don't know what's going to happen. There's just too many variables. Maybe it's not going to be as strong as they were hoping, as what they originally had thought maybe several months ago. So they just want to give up altogether. That's their job as economists up there in the New York branch, is to predict, is to forecast. We're not going to do it anymore. What do you think that means? If it was going to be a blowout fantastic number, don't you think they would just want to blast it all over the place? Because that would be sort of indicating and vindicating their policies, that this is perfectly fine, that we continue to implement emergency policies, even though we say we're no longer in an emergency. But they're not doing that. They're saying, well, we're just not going to forecast GDP. We're not going to do it. and the other branches, the other Federal Reserve District branches that do continue to put out GDP forecasts, continue to go south. Same is the case with major Wall Street banks. Everybody thought there was just going to be blowout GDP figures for the remainder of the year because all of this stimulus and all of this quote unquote pent-up demand that was out there coast to coast. Well, it's already dwindling. All of that, those huge saving rates, gone. We're back to normal, like I stated last week. We're back to normal, which means we're broke here in this country, unfortunately. People didn't have $400. They couldn't come up with $400 cash in the event of an emergency before the pandemic when we were told that it was the greatest economy ever known to man, which of course was bogus. But nonetheless, that was the narrative. That was the story. Before the pandemic, you couldn't come up with $400 cash in the event of an emergency. Then all of a sudden, it was a windfall. Everybody had all this money thanks to Uncle Sam. Not because of productivity gains in a growing economy, but because the central bank printed the money because we passed the Nobody Cares Act 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, etc., etc. You get it? And it's all gone. And I stated from the beginning before they even passed that monstrosity, don't pass it, don't do it, because they're going to justify the unjustifiable with that bill, which is exactly what they did, and they continue to do it to this day with other things now. But I said free was never going to be so expensive. And that's exactly where we are, because everybody thought it was a gift. They said, I'm finally getting mine. We bailed out all the banks and major industries last time during the great financial crisis, but I didn't get a check. This time, we're bailing out all the big banks, all of major industry, but this time I got a check. So everything's right in the world. You got your sit down and shut up money, and that's exactly what this country did. We sat down and we shut up. Now, that's going to change, because this high, this monetary fiscal policy high, is wearing off. But the effects aren't. You understand? The negative effects aren't. And those are the inflationary problems that everybody is already contending with. You have real estate prices that continue to go higher. As I stated last week, the American dream is too expensive. People can't afford housing. Your rents are going up. We did the 20 city major metropolitan areas in the country, they're all up double digits. Phoenix was up 20%. Some cities in Florida up 20%. Okay, this is rent. This is not transitory. You're signing a lease. Okay, and if you want to do a month-to-month lease, well, now you're really going to pay out the you-know-what. Okay, so if you sign a year-long lease, your rent's up 10, 15, 20%. And when we went through that list of those major cities, you're talking tens of millions of people. These are some of the biggest cities in the country. And of course, this is going to include some of those surrounding suburbs as well. So that's a significant portion of this country's population that is going to have to contend with rent prices going up 10, 15, 20%. And that was as of August, okay? These prices are going to continue to go up. So they're locked in. They're not transitory. You get it? You got it? Good. Same thing with food prices, which continue to make all-time highs or near all-time highs. And we know what this coincides with. This coincides with social upheaval. This is what we saw a decade ago with the Arab Spring. And it's what we continue to see to this day. It's what we saw prior to the pandemic, with several countries the world over protesting and rioting because they couldn't take a simple price increase. Enough was enough. They were stretched to their limits. An increase in a tax, an increase to get on a metro, pay a little bit more to buy gasoline, whatever the case was. That was the final straw. So when we have all of these monetary and fiscal policies starting to wear off, in this country and elsewhere, from that quote-unquote stimulative effect, where you were able, once the doors were open, once we were allowed in the land of the free, once we were allowed, once we were granted permission from our overlords in the land of the free, home of the brave, to go back out because it was safe. That's exactly what people wanted to do. They wanted to go out. They wanted to go back to a restaurant, their favorite restaurant, if it was still open, if they were able to survive. They wanted to take a weekend trip with their friends or their family. They wanted to go on a vacation that they didn't go on in 2020 because they couldn't. They wanted to go out to a ball game. They wanted to go out to the bars and to the clubs and to socialize. But these things wear off. And that's what's taking place. And when you go to these places, they're all that much more expensive because you still have supply chain disruptions. And you still have all of this funny money chasing a smaller number of goods, which is going to necessarily push those prices up. Again, this is not rocket science. But you have to focus again on the goods and services that you need. And this is how societies are going to break down. So they're already breaking down. The weakest links go first. We rattle these names off here all the time. The list, unfortunately, is getting longer. We have other countries such as Australia. They remain in lockdown. I mean, there's nowhere to go. This is the perfect experiment, I guess, for the powers that be to see how much they can get away with. Because when you're talking about Australia, I mean, it's a big island. They can't get off. Where are they going to go? So they're shutting them down. Do you see the riots and the protests that are taking place in Australia? Do you know of the draconian measures that government is implementing on the people of Australia? It's ridiculous, and it's quite frightening. And of course, Australia, they've confiscated all those people's guns years ago. So what's the government really afraid of? Not much, because the people, I mean, they can stand together, and that's what they're starting to do, thank goodness. But this is a lesson, because it's coming here to this country. It's coming to the United States of America. The test, the pilot area is Australia. Again, because it's a big island, they got nowhere to go. You're starting to see these types of measures take place in Europe, and they will eventually make their way here to the United States. They're already up north in Canada. They're just as crazy as the Australians, unfortunately. And I don't mean the Australian or the Canadian people. I'm talking about these little dictators up there who think they know what's best for everybody. Of course, they can go all around gallivanting and no masks, no social distancing. They can eat at five-star restaurants. They can travel, go to the best resorts and do whatever the hell they want. But you can't do it. You can't do it. They're essential. They're sophisticated. They're the elite. But you can't do it. You're non-essential. You're a small business owner. Yeah, but I sell the same goods and services as the big... Don't you get it? They're big. They're sophisticated. They're important. You're small. You're little. You're non-essential. And they're continuing to do it. And in this vein with the vaccine, because all of this stuff is connected, ladies and gentlemen, you can't disentangle this. You have to understand the big picture here. So we talked about how the panel that the CDC put together pretty much voted against the booster shots, at least for everybody, maybe some portions of the population here or there. But it wasn't this big hoorah that the White House was hoping for, right? I mean, Demented Joe wanted everybody to get another booster and another booster and another booster. And the panel said no. Well, guess what happened? The CDC director overruled the panel, which is a break of precedent. So I don't know how we're supposed to interpret this. Are we supposed to be thankful that this woman, the CDC director, overruled the panel? Because are we supposed to take away that the CDC director is compassionate and caring and wants everybody to get the booster? Meanwhile, the panel was just cold and calculated and they didn't care about anybody? I don't think that's the case. So I think you have to understand what's at play here. This is not just about public health. And of course, this is for Pfizer. So if you've had the Pfizer shot, you took number one, you took number two, now you can get the third one if you want it. Okay? What does this mean if you took Moderna? What does this mean if you took Johnson & Johnson? Can you take the Pfizer? Well, now they're pausing temporarily to say, well, we need to collect a little bit more data. Yes, I mean, in theory, you could take another vaccine from another manufacturer. It might not do that much damage, But they're gonna test it for a little bit. But something tells me, I just have this hunch, that in a matter of time, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a month, maybe even a couple of months, they will come out and they will say, yes, it's perfectly safe to take the Pfizer vaccine, the Pfizer booster, if before you've taken Moderna or you've taken Johnson & Johnson. Because they don't know what fully vaccinated means. They can't define it, which is one of the reasons I'm not taking this thing, because they don't know. I'm not going to be a guinea pig in this thing. I don't trust these people, first off. But they don't know the answers. This thing was Warp Speed, Operation Warp Speed. That's how this thing came to be. Operation Warp Speed. Doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies, to be honest with you, okay? I didn't like it. And now, we're just supposed to say, well, you took this one, now you can take that one, and take it again, and take it again, and take it again. And they don't know what fully vaccinated means. Is the third booster going to do it? Am I going to take a fourth one, a fifth one, a sixth one? How many? Until they define fully vaccinated. They don't know. This is part of the problem. Because there is no long-term studies. Okay? You got it? So aren't we lucky that we have a CDC director that's so compassionate and so great that she overruled the panel that obviously didn't care about anybody? Very interesting, isn't it? Now, also, I'll switch back to our inflationary story. We had news come out of FedEx. Oh, they're going to be increasing their rates by several percentage points come next year. So we're just getting started, folks. We are just getting started. Costco, prices are still going up. Nike, prices are still going up. What about other freight carriers? I mean, there's more than just FedEx, right? There's UPS. What about the post office? How much is it going to cost for a stamp next year? What about other freight carriers, such as Old Dominion, J.B. Hunt? The list is endless. Are they just going to eat all of their costs, too? Or are they going to start passing those off to the consumers as well? Well, they're going to. What's that going to do to food prices? What's that going to do to energy prices that has to be transported? You see, the goods and services that you need, folks, are going up. And other things will, too. Even some discretionary things. I just think that where the deflationists, where they argue, they're just wrong, in my opinion, in my analysis. I understand their argument. I understand where it's coming from. But they're just wrong. Now, we'll see. Maybe I'll be wrong. I don't think so. But we'll see. Because there's no sign of stopping with this monetary and fiscal monstrosity. Now, again, some of these effects aren't going to be as quote-unquote stimulative as before because they're not putting as much money into the pockets of the American consumer like we did before with all these stimulus checks. Again, you sit down and shut up money. Now, Demented Joe is talking about getting a fourth one out there because they're concerned, because they know what's coming. They know these effects are going to wear off. And when people can't afford to live, when they can't afford rent, when they can't afford groceries, when they can't afford to heat their homes, all hell's going to break loose. Okay? We're seeing in Europe energy prices through the roof. And it's not even winter yet. Can you imagine what's going to happen to natural gas prices in the winter? I mean, there are shortages in the UK of gasoline. So many of their gas stations are out of gas. But no, there's no problem. And it's all these idiots with all of their green policies that I guess just think that this is fantastic. It's fantastic to put you into the poorhouse, all in the name of saving the environment. And we're going to do that by doing more mining than we've ever mined before to get the minerals and the metals out of the earth to make all of these things, the electric vehicles, solar panels, wind turbines, you name it. So you solve that riddle and get back to me as to how that's going to make any sense. These people don't care. They do not care about you. They show it every single day. You have to pay attention to their actions, even their rhetoric. It might sound good to some people who can't think for themselves, so it might sound good. Oh, don't you want free healthcare? Don't you want free education? Don't you want a cleaner environment? How are you going to pay for it? And what are your policies? Well, we're going to do more mining than we've ever done before. Isn't mining dirty? Oh, yeah, but, well, can you explain that one? No, we can't explain that one. When we have wind turbines that are no longer in use, well, how do we dispose of them? Oh, well, we bury them. Oh, you just bury them in the earth. That must be very environmentally safe, huh? This is what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. This is why we are in the final chapters of this country. And really, of just Western civilization. That's what's going on here, okay? Writing's on the wall. And it's speeding up. It's a joke, but that's what we're dealing with. So you better be prepared. Now to some market performance. We have the dollar index at 93 spot 21. We have Bitcoin at $44,200 a coin. Friday, the Chinese came out for I don't know how many times they've done this over the past several years. Oh, we are banning Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. I don't know how many times the Chinese have come out and done this. Of course, that caused a little bit of a sell-off, but it is bouncing back, $44,200 a coin. We'll see what comes of this. Of course, more central banks, as the months and years progress, we are going to see central bankers wanting to issue their own digital currencies. And again, one of my arguments against a lot of these cryptocurrencies is, you know what? I understand how the argument for a lot of proponents of one cryptocurrency after the next are saying, well, it allows us to decentralize, man. It allows us to get around the government, man. No, it's not, man. Mark my words. I've said this before. I'm pretty sure I've said this to the podcast audience. If not, I definitely know I've said it to friends and family. But I'll state it here again, or maybe for the first time. Mark my words. These cryptocurrencies, especially those that are going to be issued by governments and central banks, are going to become some of the most centralized and controlling mechanisms that have ever been concocted by mankind. Ever. Write it down. Because that's what's going to happen. You want to talk about control? You want to talk about them knowing what you're purchasing? Hell, they might even program these things, and there's talk about this in the mainstream media, that they're going to program these cryptocurrencies so you can only purchase certain goods and services. And then if we go really full-blown idiot here with modern monetary theory, and then it's just going to be, well, here's 1,000 cryptocurrencies. I don't know whichever one they're going to adopt or whichever one they're going to end up coming up with. So here's $1,000 that we just give you for a minimum income, a minimum salary for the month, and it's programmed. You have to spend it, and you can only spend it on the goods and services that we approve. Ain't that free? Ain't that decentralized, man? That's exactly what's going to happen if people don't wake up and say enough's enough. The writing's on the wall. When does the government ever want to be more liberating? When does it ever want to give the people more freedom? It doesn't. Have you not been paying attention? Very controlling. Mark it down. Overnight futures, we have the S&P, the Dow Jones, and the NASDAQ 100 all up about 0.5%. The Japanese cash trade is up about 0.3% currently. On the commodity front, talking about inflation and stagflation, we have WTI at $75.20 a barrel. We have Brent at $79.35 a barrel. We're going to be at an 80 handle here in the not-too-distant future with oil. But hey, that, you know, oil doesn't go into anything. Nobody needs oil. So I guess this isn't going to trickle through to anything. Natural gas is up at $5.30. That keeps going. And again, going back to our brief discussion with European energy prices, you watch. This will bring the house down in Europe this winter if these prices continue to go north. And I imagine that is going to be the case. Gold and silver. Gold is at $1,759 an ounce. Silver is at $22.66 per ounce. It's a shame what's going on in the precious metals market. Complete and utter manipulation. There's no doubt about it in my mind. But if they want to continue to put downward price pressure on the precious metals, I look at that as an opportunity to acquire more. Physical, mining stocks, you name it. Copper, $4.30. Lumber, $643 per 1,000 linear board feet, which is interesting because lumber has been inching back up. Of course, it's well below its all-time highs. But the point that I made and stressed, even when it was on a rocket ship higher, where does it come down? It wasn't going to sustain itself up at those levels. The question is and remains, because this is going to be a process, where does the new trading range take shape? Because for the last 30 years, we had a trading range in lumber of $200 to $400. Now, if we remain at $600, we're three times the lower bound at $200, and we're 50% above the upper bound where it was $400. You get me? So even if we are to level off and establish a new trading range at $600, we're still 50% above where we were the past 30 years at the upper end. That is not going to be transitory, ladies and gentlemen. That is going to continue to put upward price pressure on new home construction and anything else. You get it? This is what you have to pay attention to. And a lot of deflationists was, well, look at how lumber collapsed. Lumber is not the commodity market. You have to look at so many. You have to look at the basket. You have to look at the basket. And you have to look at agricultural products as well. Food prices will be going through the roof. And revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. And Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.45%. This has been a big move to the upside over the past about week and a half or so. So what is this indicating? Is this indicative of a growing economy? That's what the Federal Reserve, at least that's what they had us believe before. I don't know if they're still whistling that tune now, or is this more the bond market sniffing out inflationary pressures, and they're saying, well, Uncle Sam, you're going to be paying me back in funny money, which is, of course, they're already doing now, but you're going to have to pay me a higher yield. If I'm going to give you my money for 10 years, you're going to have to give me something better than 1%. I mean, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Especially when you look at inflation at 5%. Of course, it's probably higher than that, the real number, but at least 5% inflation, and you're only going to give me 1% nominal yield on a 10-year? I mean, do the math, ladies and gentlemen. We're in negative territory and getting deeper into negative territory. So everybody wants to say, oh, in case something happens, we're going to fly to the safety of bonds. What safety? You're getting a negative real yield return. What safety is that? So once the markets wise up, once investors wise up, they're going to be flocking to gold and silver, something real. This ain't their first rodeo. You watch. It's an opportunity. Now, I do want to talk about here briefly what we would typically talk about on Thursday, which is initial jobless claims, which unfortunately increased week over week by 16,000 and came in at 351,000 on a seasonally adjusted basis for the week ending September 18th. And the prior week's number was revised upward by a few thousand. This is part of the stagflation. This is part of the stagnant economy, higher unemployment. If everything was so fantastic, why do we continue to see 351,000 people filing an initial claim? This is because of the scenario that I outlined at the top of this podcast, where you're going to see goods and services of those discretionary industries starting to feel the squeeze on their margins, and they're going to start laying people off to protect those margins. That's what we continue to witness. This is just an inconvenient truth, because prior to the pandemic, we were about 200 to 250,000 cases per week, if you will, on initial claims. Now, again, we're back to 351,000. So that's still quite an increase. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, the number came in at 306,000, still a week-over-week increase of 40,000 on a non-seasonally adjusted basis. For the week ending September 11th, this will be for continuing claims. This lags a week on a seasonally adjusted basis. The number came in at 2.85 million. This is a week-over-week increase of 131,000. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, continuing claims came in at 2.53 million, a week-over-week increase of 157,000. For the week ending September 18th, for the PUA, or Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, The number came in at 15,000, a week-over-week decrease of 8,000. Of course, the PUA and PEUC programs, I mean, we're done. So I imagine these numbers are going to fall off a cliff in the not-too-distant future. Now, in aggregate, when we take everything into consideration, again, this number lags by a couple of weeks, so this will be for the week ending September 4th. When we take into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged vets, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and workshare program, we give it a grand total of 11.25 million. This is a week-over-week decrease of some 856,000. So we're going to start most likely seeing these numbers really start to drop off because these emergency policies, these emergency programs, PUA and PEUC, Children of the Nobody Cares Act, they're done. All right? So the biggest decreases on a week-over-week basis were in regular state, down 290,000. The PUA program down 591,000, and the PEUC program down 161,000. Biggest gain came in extended benefits. These are state benefits, up 189,000. Okay, now each state is going to be different. If you qualify, of course, then you qualify, you'll receive the additional benefits. If not, then before you were able to file for the PUA or the PEUC, whichever one you might qualify for, and then you would be awarded those benefits, but they're done. The other thing that's done, of course, is the moratorium. So you have all of these people who are not paying their rent, courtesy of Uncle Sam, landlords getting screwed out the yin-yang, and now to compensate for that, landlords are increasing their rent because they need a safety cushion. They need a safety cushion from their own government because they now have to price in that risk that Uncle Sam is going to screw him over, because politicians want to be compassionate about renters, but they don't want to be compassionate about the landlords, about the landowners. And again, a lot of these landlords are middle-class individuals and couples who are trying to build their nest egg, have some cash flow, and just run another little side business. Well, they got screwed. Well, I guess they were non-essential. It didn't matter. But this was prime opportunity for the elite. It was prime opportunity for pension funds, BlackRock, Blackstone, other pension funds, hedge funds, you name it, to go in and swoop up all of these properties all over the place because the Federal Reserve was giving them funny money to go have a ball. And we're going to get to that too right now. So we have the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, surprise, surprise, hitting another all-time high at $8.49 trillion. $8.49 trillion, a new all-time high on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, a week-over-week increase of $41 billion. The week before that was, what, some $90 billion? So we're at $130 billion over the past couple of weeks. The Federal Reserve tells us that they're going to remain committed to $120 billion at least per month. Well, they are well above their clip, aren't they? Well above their target. Only a couple of weeks into this thing. That's been par for the course, though, by the way. Then you got mortgage-backed securities, which, of course, is feeding these price increases in real estate and thus in rent, too, because real estate prices lead rent prices. So we've seen real estate prices continuing to go up pretty much all year. And we're going to continue to see rent prices continue to follow that trend, coast to coast. So mortgage-backed securities, those holdings also hit a new all-time high and now stands at $2.54 trillion, a week-over-week increase of $22 billion. So the breakdown, again, to remind the audience or to inform the audience, if this is the first time you're listening to this podcast and unaware of this, the Federal Reserve is committed to at least $120 billion in purchases per month of U.S. Treasuries in mortgage-backed securities. The breakdown is supposed to be $80 billion in U.S. Treasuries and $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities. Well, as you can see from the numbers, I mean, they're well above that clip now. Of course, they have stated that we're at least going to be purchasing $120 billion a month. They want to continue to go higher and higher. Now, with the idiots in Congress wanting to pass another $3.5 trillion that we don't have, which of course is going to be more than that, you have new estimates coming out that it's really going to cost $5.5 trillion over 10 years. Well, surprise, surprise, a bill out of Congress is not going to be what they say it's going to be. It's going to be much more than that. What a shocker. What a surprise. Then they want to vote this week on another $1 trillion infrastructure bill. So there's another $4 trillion, $5, $6 trillion, $7 trillion that we don't have. But they're going to do it. They're going to get away with it. And who's going to fund all of this, of course, is the Federal Reserve. So they are just waiting, the Fed, they are just waiting for more justification to continue to expand their balance sheet. Now, this past week, it was the conclusion of the Federal Open Market Committee. Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, gave his statement, gave his press conference. Of course, softball questions, dodged the hard ones, if there even were any. Not worth our time to really go over it. Inflation is no longer transitory are the big takeaways. Federal Reserve members, and I've talked about this over the past couple of weeks, Federal Reserve members who were openly trading the markets, they got caught, a little slap on the wrist, not even, made millions of dollars, and now all of a sudden it's an ethics concern. They are internally reviewing what's going on within the Federal Reserve. Because you had a Federal Reserve president down in Texas, and a Dallas, and a Federal Reserve president up in Boston, trading the markets, making millions and millions of dollars off of the policies that they knew that they would be implementing. It wasn't an ethics concern then. It wasn't a conflict of interest a year ago when they started doing this. And of course, it's been long before that. It was only a problem when they got caught, when somebody made a stink about it, when it actually got into the media. That's the only time these people ever care. It's the only time they ever care. It's like going back to like Edward Snowden and talking about how our own government spies on us. It's going on for a long time. But nobody ever said anything until you had those leaks. And then, well, we can't talk about the leaks. We actually can't talk about the information where the government's actually spying on us and violating our constitutional rights. No, let's just attack the messenger. Let's attack Edward Snowden. So that's the same thing. It's never a problem until they get caught because they're criminals, ladies and gentlemen. That's their mentality. They're sociopaths. They're psychopaths. They're narcissists. We know this by their actions and we know this by their rhetoric. It's very easy to point these people out and to understand what it is that they are doing. There is no end in sight to this. On this clip, at this pace, the Fed's balance sheet will be $9 trillion by the end of the year. If something should happen in the interim, should there be a liquidity crisis, should something break and become some sort of contagion event, whether that's Evergrande out of China, whether that's something in Europe, whether it's something in the U.S. or anywhere, the Federal Reserve will, of course, do what they do best and expand their balance sheet and print money and justify the unjustifiable. So, $9 trillion if we continue on its current trajectory. $10 trillion if there's a liquidity event or something else happens where they feel justified to come in to print more money to ease whatever situation we might be contending with. Because they don't care. They are not held to account by anybody. They are not overruled by anybody. This is supposed to be a system of checks and balances. There is nobody who checks them. There is nobody who keeps them in balance. They can do whatever the hell they want to do, and that's exactly what they do. They want to trade and make millions of dollars, benefiting from the very policies that they have the authority to implement. That's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do, and that's what they did. And you can bet your rear end they're continuing to do it. What do you think is going to happen? You think they're going to fire President Kaplan of the Dallas Fed? You think they're going to fire President Rosengren of the Boston Fed? No. These people aren't going anywhere. And even if they do, they're still going to walk away with their millions of dollars. They're not going to give this back to the Fed. They're not going to give this back to Uncle Sam. They're not going to give this to some charity. They're going to put it in their pocket because they don't care, because they can get away with it. So there you have it, folks. This is the country we are dealing with. This is a banana republic. And it's only going to get worse because stagflation and inflation is not so transitory. You're hearing it from me. You're hearing it now from members of the Federal Reserve who are doing a 180 on this. You're now hearing it from Dingbat Janet Yellen, who is saying that it's going to be here a little bit longer than we had anticipated. You're hearing it from the world's largest corporations that we continue to see upward price pressure, and we're going to have to start passing those prices on to our consumers. Well, who didn't see this coming? But don't worry about it. You're going to get another check. Sit down and shut up. That's the American way. Just get paid off. Just get bribed. Take your drugs. Put your head in the sand. It's football season. All's right in the world. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Stagflation, not so transitory. You've been warned here many times before. And as I like to say, stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.